You're listening to On the Same Page, a podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library. Welcome back to another episode of On the Same Page, a podcast from the Jefferson Madison Regional Library System. I'm Abby, here with my co-host, EJ.
That's right, I'm EJ. In today's episode, we will introduce you to our latest system-wide event, a contest you won't want to miss. Then we'll have our book chats, and finally, we're getting back into our podcast book club, Overbooked.
Let's jump right into our advertisement for the day. We're excited to share with you, listeners, the announcement of JMRL and Writer House's poetry contest.
So, Abby, are you a big writer? Do you like to put your thoughts down on paper at all?
You know I do, EJ. Heck yeah. We all have stories to tell. We're all writers. How about you?
Yeah, I write a little bit. That's definitely true. But what I'm really excited to share with you is this year's poetry contest.
Whoa, is that something that just anyone can enter?
It sure is. JMRL has partnered with Writer House again this year for the poetry contest, but now it is in the fall. It used to be in the spring, now it's in the fall.
Oh yeah, I remember it was in the spring, and now it's in the fall. All right, that's so great. Right in time for National Poetry Day.
Yep, you got it. National Poetry Day is the first Thursday in October. So, JMRL and Writer House are going to be celebrating this contest running through September 24th through October 25th.
So, how does one enter this contest?
Just visit jmrl.org and click the poetry contest image on the front page. From there, you'll be able to see this year's guidelines, and there's even an electronic form for submissions this year.
Wow, that's great. I'm all about that electronic form. But what do you win?
Oh, yes. I was just getting there. The first place winner will get a $200 Visa gift card, and the runner-up receives a $100 Visa gift card. The finalist judge this year is UVA English and Creative Writing Professor Lisa Russ Spar.
Wow, I love Lisa Russ Spar. I'm going to make sure all my poet friends know about this.
Awesome. That sounds great. I'm going to do the same. And be sure to check out the show notes for a link to JMRL's poetry contest webpage. Hello, listeners. With fall in full swing, we know you want some new reading recommendations. Abby and I have you covered. And before we jump into book chat, we want to share another great way you can get new to you books. The Friends of JMRL Fall Book Sale is a great way to support us by buying some great books for yourself or for your family and friends. Books make great holiday gifts. Mark your calendars for October 15th through October 23rd. You can find the sale at 300 Albemarle Square Shopping Center from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day.
For today's book chat pick, I picked The Soul of an Octopus by Cy Montgomery. I chose this book because my book club read this one month. It was a month that I was not in attendance, but I remember when we chose the book as a club and it sounded really interesting. It's also popular science, which was a genre that I've been interested in and enjoying so far this year. The subtitle is A Surprising Exploration into the World of Consciousness. We did learn a lot about an octopus intelligence, like how they survive, how they thrive. It's just that we're not really knowing their true thoughts, which makes sense. I don't know if we know any animal's real thought. But we learn a lot about their instincts and their personalities, their behavior. So it's a great story about the author, Cy Montgomery. She's, I suppose, an animal studier and a writer, and she makes friends with these octopuses at the local aquarium. As they, unfortunately, they have short lifespans, so they die, and then there's a new octopus brought in, and she gets to know these various octopuses and all the other people at the aquarium. So I really enjoyed the book, but I also had trouble with it because it's hard to read about animals in captivity. As much as it was sweet to see the animals form bonds with the humans, and also to know that they, yes, lived longer in captivity than they would have in the wild, because the wild is a wild and dangerous place. The staff were incredibly loving towards the octopuses, but it's hard to read about them being caught and transported to these aquariums. There's also a part in the book where we read about octopuses being kept as pets by just random people in their houses. That was a little weird, too. It all just kind of falls into this dilemma that we're starting to face now, which is, by keeping the animals in captivity, the pro of that is that you have the opportunity to get to know them and therefore care about them and protect them in the wild. But the question is, how do we keep that balance? Like, how much exposure do you need to an octopus in order to care about it enough to protect it? How important is it to make these wild animals accessible to the masses via aquariums or that sort of thing? So it's a question, it's a dilemma. I don't know the answer at all, but the book did really make me want to visit an aquarium and see an octopus, just because in reading it, I realized it had been a really long time since I had been to an aquarium and seen an octopus. The author also learns how to scuba dive, but actually that was not made to sound as appealing because she had a number of problems related to the scuba diving and it was dangerous. But the aquarium was always made to sound very idyllic, even when it was undergoing some serious construction and renovation. So I thought that was just an interesting setup that she had there of creating this paradise aquarium setting. And she does dive into those questions of animals in captivity, but maybe not quite as much as I was hoping for. But it's all supposed to be about the mind of an octopus, so she was staying focused to her topic. Yeah, I would recommend this for people who enjoy popular science and who enjoy animals.
So for my book chat pick this week, I read The Marlowe Murder Club by Robert Thorogood. It is what I would call like a cozy mystery. It's pretty no-nonsense, but it's very lightweight. It is by the creator of the Death in Paradise series. So if you enjoyed that, you might also enjoy this. I think it's going to be the first in a series. That's how it's listed in a couple of places. So there might be sequels to it. And that makes sense as the character development, especially for our main character, Judith Potts. It was very well done. All of the character development in it was quite endearing. I liked pretty much everybody that I was supposed to like and didn't like the people that I wasn't supposed to like. So that became pretty clear. So basically, Judith Potts is a 77-year-old human who is living just outside of Marlowe, which is in England. And it's a very little village on the Thames. And she's an avid swimmer. She also is very active in the town, but what she does for a job is she is a crossword creator, I guess. So she kind of compiles clues for crosswords that appear in papers and things like that. So it's pretty interesting. So she already has kind of this, I don't know, clever air about her that she is already interested in solving things. And so when she actually witnesses or hears a murder of her next door neighbor, she kind of becomes a neighborhood detective of sorts. So she meets this cast of characters through the book, of course, and she works with a couple of people in the, I guess, like their police force as well, and trying to figure out how this first murder starts, and then there ends up being a string of murders that she works to try to solve. And she's quite good at it. She meets a lot of different people. There's a couple of really amazing characters in here. One of them is the wife of the vicar at the All Saints Church in Marlowe, and her name is Bex Starling, and she is described as like a regular homemaker type mother, you know, yoga all the time, trying to take care of herself, that type of character, but also
a little bit OCD, maybe has some OCD tendencies that she's not aware of. So the descriptions there were very interesting to listen to, but also how Judith and their other friend Susie end up helping Bex deal with all of her, what she calls her own shortcomings, which aren't really at all, is very nice. It's a very great look at friendship, especially older friendship and intergenerational friendship, because Judith is 77 and her friends that she makes along the way are much younger than her and have children that, you know, obviously Judith could be their, pretty much their parents almost. So I really enjoyed it. I don't want to give too much away about the plot as it is a cozy mystery. But if you like cozy mysteries, if you're into one that is not set in the US, if you want to explore one that's set internationally, this one's set in the UK. So it has some other terminology and different things that maybe you're not extremely well versed in. But I think it's worthwhile. I enjoyed it a bunch and I'll definitely read more.
All right, listeners, you know what time it is. It's overbooked time. We're here to discuss chapters 19 through 21 of our book club pick, The Glass Ocean. We can't wait to hear what you thought of these chapters. Send us your thoughts by emailing podcast@jmrl.org.
Okay, so we're going to jump right back into Overbooked with Chapter 19. We are with Sarah. We are in Devon, England. It's 2013. She's awakened by loud noises. She's quite scared because, of course, you know, she's in the Imperial Star Destroyer. And so she's a little freaked out. What could it be? And she's about to call, like, 911, except remembers that she's in England and so it's not 911 there. So she's about to, like, dial in. She's greeted by Walnut. Walnut is back, our favorite Whippet. So I'm very excited that Walnut's back. I'm excited the dogs are back. And if the dog is back, that means John is back. So I'm excited. John's back with her. And they introduce a new character that Abby will start to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Uncle Rupert. I didn't even remember that Walnut was there because I was just so consumed with Uncle Rupert. Because how can you not be? He is such a character. He seems to me like the classic comedic relief, a great tool by the authors to reveal this information in new ways. So it's not always just like finding something in the paper or having a serious conversation. There's a surprising amount of humor in this book. I'm joking that it seems to span like all genres. Like this is historical fiction, mystery, romance, humor, contemporary. I mean, this book is just a little bit of everything, which It has three authors, so they all bring these different skills, which is fun. But yeah, Uncle Rupert, he's a military historian. I love how he described the past as a living creature. He seems to me to be a little bit eccentric, of course, because he's just all over the place. He's wild. It's the middle of the night. They have this hilarious encounter. John said, "Uncle Rupert, tell Sarah what you talked about in the car." And of course, it being a funny scene, he says, oh, she doesn't want to hear about Nigel. Nigel being his partner, and they're into some, maybe a lover spat. We don't know. But, of course, we don't care about Nigel. Well, okay, we care about you, Nigel, but not right now. What we care about is that Uncle Rupert has talked about Robert's father, John's great-grandfather, who is named Sir Peregrine Langford. And we find out that he was a director of Room 40, the secret department within the Admiralty, responsible for cryptoanalysis, aka decoding things. Wow. So that's a big revelation here.
So John, Sarah, Rupert, they're all on the knowledge hunt still. They still don't know for sure what everything means, and there's still stuff that they have to figure out, but this is a big step in the right direction, and Uncle Rupert is only going to be helpful from here on out, I think. But really, for me, this chapter was all about the end of the chapter, the tension throughout the chapter. There's so much tension in this chapter because it's like, are Sarah and John finally going to realize that they have feelings for each other, or are they going to like set these feelings aside? Because we're getting to the point now where we can no longer deny that there's something going on between Sarah and John. It's adorable. I love it. And finally, like the last sentence we get is that they kiss. How excited were you, Abby?
I was so excited because I've not always been the biggest fan of John and Sarah, but this is really when I was like, okay, I'm ready to convert. I'm ready to be on team John and Sarah. I loved the kiss. I mean, oh my gosh. At the very end when she says, oh, just so you know, you're not plain old John. And he goes, John and Sarah. And I was like, whoa, he's putting their names together. Like, just like belonging. The idea of belonging with someone, like your name side by side, it's just very, very cute. Because when your names are side by side, it just shows that you belong together. So I loved that. And I know that you're excited too, AJ. Let's hear some more thoughts.
Oh, I'm just ecstatic. I'm just dancing over here as Abby is recapping everything. I'm just super excited that they finally have figured out a way to make this happen. But that's really how the chapter ends. So it dives right into chapter 20. So I think we'll just go ahead and dive right into Caroline's chapter. Caroline, dealing with a different type of love equation here. She's coming to the realization pretty quickly that she loves everybody. She loves Gilbert. She loves Robert. And she's kind of stuck in a bit of a predicament. She's awoken from a strange noise. When I first read the first paragraph, I was like, it's happening! The torpedo! It's happening! It's happening! But it wasn't happening. It was an unexplained noise. But the concert is happening this day. And so she wakes up, she tries to find Gilbert, and she can't find Gilbert, but when she gets back to her room, she does find a very mysterious letter under her door that she doesn't know if she saw before. And it turns out that somebody knows something, and they are blackmailing Caroline now with some things. So your thoughts on that, Abby, on what Caroline discovers when she gets back under her door?
Yeah, the note, it says, I know your secret. You must deliver what I ask after the concert. And honestly, I wasn't even tempted to try to figure out who sent this note because I have no idea. I don't know if it was Jones. I don't know if it was Patrick. I love these little breadcrumbs that the authors are putting in here because, for example, she sends multiple notes throughout the day to other people. She's sending notes to Gilbert and Robert via Patrick. So just another maybe clue that Patrick, a reminder that Patrick is not just making the beds and getting everyone tea. He's also delivering all these notes. We're just kind of getting through this day so that we can get to when the action's really going to happen.
The chapter really picks up during the concert. Right. So during the concert, you know, Caroline, Gilbert, they're all sitting there, you know, watching people go. And then it's finally Caroline's turn and Marjorie's turn. So Caroline's up at the piano on in front of everyone and she notices something quite strange. She notices Gilbert pops up right next to, you know, her buddy, Robert. And they walk off together. And she literally tries to stand up. Marjorie shoves her down and is like, play. Like, Marjorie is like, I'm not having this. You're not ruining my moment. Because Marjorie is very into herself and her own moments. So she doesn't want Caroline to ruin it. But, it's strange. Robert and Gilbert walk away, leave the concert together while Caroline is playing. Like, she's not going to notice. That's probably one of the biggest issues I had with this. Was that, of course she's noticing. Do you not think she's going to notice? We don't get a resolution in this chapter because that's the end of the Caroline's chapter when they walk out. But the next chapter has got to be Caroline confronting either one or both of them being like, what the heck's going on? Why? Like, I saw you guys together. So thoughts on what you think's going on there, Abby?
I have two thoughts about this. First thought is that when Marjorie pushed Caroline down and said play, I did think, oh, this is because Marjorie's self-centered. But I also had the thought of, what if Marjorie is in on something with Gilbert and Robert, and then just she's in on it, you know, and she doesn't want Caroline to see. My other thought is, I want to just make a note of how miserable Caroline is during this concert. She's almost having an out-of-body experience. She's having trouble focusing. She's messing up a lot, which is not like her. So she's having trouble. And when people clap at the end of it, she thinks that they're almost laughing at her, clapping in jest.
So I think it's important to note that because it's going to come up again next chapter. So I just wanted to make a note of how this is not a great day for Caroline.
Okay, so after that interesting development, we find out some stuff about Tess. So Tess, okay, what's going on? She's obviously upset after her big blowout with Ginny, right? And she thinks that Ginny ultimately is just like blowing off steam and she'll come around and all of that stuff. But we know as readers that that is not going to be what happens because we are just running out of time in general just because we know when the Lusitania goes down. So we know that they're running out of time since stuff is about to happen here pretty quickly. She is looking around for who she ultimately loves, and that's Robert. So I don't think it's any surprise to anybody that Tess comes to a realization in this chapter that she also loves Robert. So Robert's getting lots of love. He's a popular guy. She finds him, and who does she see next to him, and who does she see leaving with? Gilbert. So she witnesses them leaving. She takes this opportunity to do what Tess does best, to eavesdrop on some very, very enlightening conversations. We're finally figuring out some answers to what we've always wanted. And I think Abby is going to be pretty excited to talk about these realizations that we've come to.
Okay, once again, two thoughts. My first thought is that I loved reading Tess look in on Caroline's piano recital because I thought that that was a really great way for one of the messages of the book to ring out, which is that appearances mean nothing. Tess looks in and she sees all this opulence, all this beauty. It's glittering, it's gold, it's bright, it's beautiful. She sees Caroline at the piano bench. She looks regal. It just looks like the perfect night for Tess, and Tess is feeling bad because she's not having anywhere near a perfect night. So she feels jealous, even though it's not written there overtly. My second thought is just that I love chapters like this that feel very confessional to me because then it all comes tumbling out, and even though I did none of the work to create the mystery or to solve the mystery, I feel so smart, like, oh yeah, it all makes sense. I love it. And I just like, oh, yay, I get happy about it. So I finally understand the trains of thought that everyone's been having. I finally understand some of the actions. And I also was, for some reason, I was really happy to find out that Robert and Gilbert were on the same side. I don't know why necessarily, but I was just happy about that. I was pleasantly surprised. So what do you think, EJ?
Tess overhears that Gilbert and Robert are on the same side. Robert has been looking for days for the man and the document he is supposed to protect. And up until this point, that person had not made themselves known to Robert, even though Gilbert, the man and the document, knew that Robert was his contact. And they kind of have this whole, well, I didn't come forward because of the whole thing with Caroline type of thing. They don't say her name and they never actually refer to her, but they're referring to her. I mean, it's there. They're referring to her. And Tess overhears all of this, and Tess is aware that Robert clearly is talking about his love for Caroline at this moment. She's learning that this person that she just realized herself that she loves, she's realizing that they don't love her and actually don't seem to care about her at all. That's how where her mind goes. So that's pretty sad for Tess. But really what I found the most interesting is that the music didn't even matter. It was all a ruse. The whole music was a distraction that Gilbert and his people that he's working with, whoever, came up with this ruse that would get the German spies basically looking for something that didn't exist or something that was worthless, essentially. And that the document actually is a formula that is inside of Gilbert's head because he has an eidetic memory. Good for Gilbert, good for Robert. They're all on the same team. But really, the stuff with Tess and Robert, that's where this gets good. So after Tess overhears everything, she grabs Robert. She's not going to let him get away from this. And, I mean, Tess
she loses it, basically. She pretty much confesses everything. So do you want to talk about the second part of the confessional, Abby? Tess's confession?
I'm really interested to find out more about anything related to Robert and Tess's relationship, because I'm very curious to know who he's going to end up with, because I just think that there's no way he can end up with Tess. And if he does, like, some things are going to have to happen, like some big brush strokes are going to have to be painted, like, okay, 20 years later, you know, all this happened. Like, maybe a jump of time or something, I don't know, but yeah, this changes a lot. And it was also interesting to see a different side of Robert. For the first time, we saw him not being a charmer. He was not a ladies' man. He was in business mode. He was very stern and firm, and he was ready to go.
My prediction is, and it always has been since we had their first interactions, I still think it's Tess that he marries. I mean, I still do. I still think it's Tess that he marries. I think this realization that Gilbert and Robert are on the same team makes me like Gilbert more. It turns out he's just like supposed to be that way, perhaps. Like, we still got some time to go. Maybe it turns out he's not. There could be some double-crossing situations happening, I guess. But no, I think Caroline and Gilbert will sail off into the sunset together. Because ultimately, I think Caroline won't break up her marriage. I think that's really what it's going to come down to. And Gilbert is going to forgive Caroline for the whole Robert thing because he knows. They both know. They've acknowledged it. I still think it's Tess. I'm so excited for the next couple of chapters because I want it to be Tess so bad.
You know what? Honestly, EJ, like, I probably think you're right because that would make a lot of sense. And it would make everybody to be the most likable that they are possible to be, which helps readers feel satisfied with the story. Because you're right. I turned a corner with Gilbert as well. This set of chapters, I felt like, oh, you know, Gilbert, he has that moment of telling Robert that he really loves Caroline. That is a really vulnerable moment and very true in my opinion. So they made it so that we felt for him. So it's almost like they're setting it up so that we can have everybody win, like all four characters, and everyone have a happy ending, which would be great. So we'll see about that. That would be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens next. We'll see you guys in 2 weeks for the next set of chapters.
Before we sign off today, here's how you can grow, learn, and connect these next 2 weeks at JMRL.
At Central, come enjoy an afternoon in the Shire with Hobbit crafts and fun for all ages on Sunday, October 2nd from 1 to 4 p.m. Drop in anytime.
At Crozet, learn about the magical flight of the monarch butterfly migration on Wednesday, October 12th at 3:30 p.m., suitable for ages 6 to 11.
Gordon Avenue's Storytime at the Garden is Wednesday, October 12th. Meet at Charlottesville's Botanical Garden of the Piedmont. Storytime begins at 10 a.m.
Green County Library's First Thursday's Adult Book Club is on Thursday, October 6th at 7 p.m. The group will be discussing Northern Spy by Flynn Berry.
At Louisa, the Bring Your Craft group is meeting Wednesdays throughout October at 1 p.m.
Nelson Memorial Library is celebrating 50 years with an anniversary open house on Tuesday, October 4th at 10 a.m.
At Northside, join the tabletop role-playing Haunted House Adventure for ages 11 through 17 on Wednesday, October 5th. There are several times and sessions available, so contact Northside for more information or to register.
Stop by Scottsville on Thursday, October 13th for the Quilting and Knitting Gathering. Drop by anytime between 11 and 12:30 to spend time with other stitchers.
Don't forget to contact branches with any questions or to register for programs. Thank you, listeners, for being a part of this podcast community. We're so happy to have you. We hope you'll join us in taking a moment to thank the Friends of the Library, who generously support this endeavor. If you'd like to learn more or join the Friends, you can head to their website at jmrlfriends.org.
That's all for us for today. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our next episode. Don't forget, you can get involved on social media or by emailing us at podcast@jmrl.org. Thanks for tuning in. We're glad to be
on the same page.